Thank you. So my name is Tegan Callahan, and I'm excited to present a profile of a project that Development and Gardening, or DIG, has done in Zambia recently. So this is, I guess, can be seen as a case study or overview of one garden intervention in one community, as the title suggests, and I'll do some musing at the end about what one garden could actually do. So I'm actually a volunteer for this organization, and I hope to answer any questions you may have, and I would very enthusiastically connect you with the organization and the program staff if you want more information when we're done. Okay, so I have no relationships to disclose. This is an overview of what one garden can do is going to go through. I'm going to begin giving you a little bit more background on our organization and the project and some of the current issues in the communities we're working in, and then at the end maybe talk a little bit about some larger impact and the global health perspective of this work. So the mission of Development and Gardening is to improve the nutrition and health of HIV-affected and at-risk populations through sustainable gardening. And we do this by training people in agriculture and nutrition and providing resources to create projects that empower communities to meet their own needs. And really our overall value and guiding philosophy as an organization is that we believe everyone has the right to good nutrition. So in 2010, a UN Food and Agricultural Organization report also articulated this general value. The report says, good nutrition is crucial to reach the health, education, and economic goals contained in the MDGs, since good health, cognitive development, and productivity cannot be achieved without good nutrition. Poorly nourished children cannot grow and develop properly, resist infections, or learn to their full potential. Malnourished adults are less capable of performing work and are severely disadvantaged in terms of their social and economic security. Nutrition has a singularly important role to play in helping people living with HIV and in mitigating the impact of the disease among affected household members. So this kind of sums up why, in the realm of global health interventions, we're focusing on nutrition and having a food-based and a food security approach towards global health. So to contextualize this work a little bit, I'm going to highlight some of the basic health indicators of Zambia, as well as the community we're working in. So Zambia overall has a high rate of undernourished in the population, as well as a high under 5 mortality rate, 14.1%. The number of under 5 suffering from stunting countrywide is about 45%. And the HIV prevalence in Zambia is 13.5%, but in the region we work in the area we work in Kafue, it is 22.4%. So Kafue is a peri-urban setting. It's about an hour west of Lusaka, which is the capital of Zambia. And you can see the last figure is that the life expectancy in Zambia is about 46 years. So our collaboration began with funding from CIDRS, which is the Center for Infectious Disease Research in Zambia. We started a project in August of 2010 and wrapped up in June of 2011, and our overall collaboration goals were to provide a vital source of micronutrients for mothers, babies, and people living with HIV, to increase antiretroviral therapy adherence, to teach organic gardening skills and improved cooking for nutrition, to empower mothers and people living with HIV support groups, and to figure out ways to supplement income. So you can see that these objectives address dual issues of malnutrition, undernourishment, and HIV treatment and adherence goals. And to speak a little bit more to that last point, CIDRS, the project funder, provides antiretroviral therapy in the area. And in Zambia, like in many countries, you have a substantial number of people on antiretroviral therapy these days. And one of the key challenges to the ultimate success and sustainability of these programs is keeping people on therapy. So reviews of the published literature suggest that within this region, within sub-Saharan Africa, after approximately 10 months, only 77% of patients are retained on ART in sub-Saharan Africa. So our informal assessments of the region we were working kind of suggested there are multiple factors behind why people fall off ART, loss to follow-up, is what this was referred to. So CIDRS wanted us to try and address some of these issues so they can have less loss to follow up in their programs. So within our communities, we talked to people and heard, you know, food insecurity is top on their list as one of their reasons for loss to follow up. There's other reasons, transport costs, time needed for treatment, logistical barriers, and just having a closed HIV status in the community and some of the stigma that that leads to. So in order to respond to these issues and try to address the link between HIV adherence and malnutrition, DIG worked within the healthcare facilities on a garden-based intervention in the community. So just to give you some background on the garden-based intervention, we created demonstration gardens at four sites. Three were at clinics and one was at the district hospital. The gardens were each between 1 to 2 acres and were planted with open pollinating seeds so they could be harvested. They were maintained using all organic methods, which included green manures, composting, mulching, and organic insecticides. Not all vegetables planted were indigenous, but most were available in the local markets, and local seeds were used as much as possible. So in addition to starting these demonstration gardens, DIG offered trainings on all cycles of the garden process. Trainings were specifically offered to groups that had been pre-established within these healthcare facilities, mainly support groups at the facilities for people living with HIV or for mothers who had children who were born underweight. These groups were operating outside of DIG's presence in the community. And we approached them and worked with them, and the training cycles included digging the garden, planting, composting, caring for plants, watering schedules, harvesting, and seed saving. As a part of the trainings and also as an open forum for the community, there were cooking demonstrations that went along, and the recipes related to local eating habits. They added greens to porridge and not cooking vegetables quite as long, substituting certain vegetables for others. And finally, participants in the program also received support at the end of the formal training period to develop individual home gardens. And this training was mainly in-kind donations or technical assistance. So this is a before photo of the garden that was developed at the railway clinic. And before DIG's work in the community, this was just a lot that was used, unpurposed space primarily for dumping garbage. And this is our after shot. Similar unpurposed space behind the district hospital before and after. And then these are some images from the Ngonwe Clinic Nutrition Program. This is one of the sites where we work specifically with an already established nutrition program and targeted demonstrations around the need for nutritional needs for under five specifically. And then this is just a photo that captures some of the bounty that came from the gardens. So what can one garden do? This is some of the monitoring data from this project. We had a total of 103 participants in the trainings. And since the trainings, we know that about 40% of the participants have remained active in applying the techniques, either through home gardens or maintaining the original demonstration gardens. So this is some of the broad success and challenges that we saw throughout our project. Basically, we worked with highly motivated and committed participants, a high level of interest, especially among the mothers who were in the nutrition groups. We were able to have good harvest the year we worked there, and were able to integrate the vegetables into cooking demonstrations to really bring everything full circle. And the gardens did attract the attention and interest of the broader community while we were there. Challenges was low attendance in the rainy season and trying to incorporate trying to include women, not just who had just had a kid or were in these programs, but women from across the community. Of course, insects and diseases are always an issue with gardening. And then the last point, since participants were able to take vegetables home, it was also a challenge to kind of convince people of eating the importance of eating vegetables and feeding them to their babies instead of just using that for additional income, which was also fine, but you want people to do both. So what can one garden do? This is something at DIG that we think about a lot. And there are many benefits we've seen throughout our work. So we kind of try to think about the different kinds of capital out there. And these are anecdotal ways that we see garden interventions being cross-cutting investments into a community. So for example, a garden project can increase skills and knowledge and address knowledge capital issues. They also can repurpose land. So in this part of Zambia, the water table is very high. It's easy to get water. And there's a lot of great agricultural land that's not being used. So what are different ways we can develop the capital and invest in that land? Gardening is one of them. Also help build economic capital within a community through skills training, income generation, and can even have an effect, we feel, on the social capital element of this work. So gardens aren't just a garden, they're a meeting place. They bring people together, help people take an active role in their own community and their own health outcomes. So these are some of the participants in this project in Kafue and some of their voices. One voice said, the only reason I joined the antiretroviral therapy support group was because of the organic gardening classes. So we heard that, you know, the gardening helped incentivize the rest of the efforts, and specifically the CIDR's efforts around HIV treatment. Getting to the social capital piece, another participant said, we used to garden on our land, but have stopped until now. And I am now creating an organic farm with the support of 10 neighbors who are both HIV positive and HIV negative. So bringing people together, having skills translate across the community. So finally, what role do these types of interventions have in global public health? People in this room might already have a perspective that highlights the need for food security or a food-based approach to public health, but we wonder if it's always common among our colleagues to think about food-based approaches. And at DIG, we really feel that food insecurity is one of the largest challenges to health that will affect population levels in the coming decades. So this challenge is only going to increase, and sustainable farming initiatives are critical to meet the needs of some of the most vulnerable populations. For issues such as HIV, especially in sub-Saharan African contexts, there may not be a magic bullet to fix everything, and there is no one innovation or discipline that can solve all the multi-layered problems we see with communities that have such a high burden of disease and are affected, both infected and affected by HIV. So it's critical for public health workforce to work on multidisciplinary levels and include agriculture and a focus on nutrition. And finally, we think social capital is critical to your health capital. And at DIG, we've seen gardens be also used to create space for stigmatized populations to learn new skills, directly engage with community members. And we think these things have an impact on one's health. So that's the presentation today. Thank you very much. That web address is reaplifedig.org. It got cut off there.